This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, it's springtime, a time for renewal and growth, and it's also the time to remind folks about the important service WESU provides to the community.
That's right, Mark. It is true community radio. That's what WESU is, and it provides a unique opportunity for a wide array of voices to be heard with programming that's as rich and diverse as the people of this great community. Not only do you hear thought leaders on healthcare on our show, but throughout the day, there's jazz, blues, terrific interviews on arts and politics and things that really matter.
You know, we're celebrating our 40th, and all during that time, we've always listened to WESU. It feels like we're part of their family as well.
And as with all families, Mark, we are made better when we roll up our sleeves and pitch in.
And this is the time, Margaret, when we ask our listeners to help during Spring Pledge Week. Dial 860-685-7700. Make your pledge now. You know, we don't have the fanciest studios here or the latest, but we have passion, and it's fueled by your support of our work. What we have at WESU as well is a bunch of hardworking, generous volunteers who bring you all this great programming 24 hours every day, 7 days a week.
And with all that volunteer energy, it still takes money. The lights have to be kept on, the heating bills paid, the equipment running, and for that, we need your generous support.
So dial 860-685-7700. That's the number to call right now. The number again is 860-685-7700.
And you can also pledge your support online by going to the website, wesufm.org/pledge. The site is a safe and a secure way to give, and it only takes a couple of minutes, we promise.
Well, we know times are tough for a lot of folks out there, and we want you to know that any amount that you can give will go exactly where it needs to go, helping keep WESU on the air. So all donations are so very much appreciated. We don't want to give those numbers again, do we? Yeah, I think we do. Let's give them out one more time, because you know what? 860-685-7700.
860-685-7700. We thank you.
Our guest today is Daniel Wolfson, Chief Operating Officer of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation, the ABIM Foundation, along with Consumer Reports, just launched an initiative called Choosing Wisely, urging clinicians from 9 different medical disciplines to scale back the number of overused medical tests that often don't yield meaningful results, which can actually harm patients and drive up cost.
And another feature, factcheck.org's Lori Robertson looks into claims being made against the Affordable Care Act that it will hurt small business. No matter what the topic, though, you can find all of our shows by Googling chcradio.com.
And as always, if you have questions, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'll get to Mr. Wolfson in a moment. But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services expect the health care reform law will yield more than $200 billion in savings through the year 2016 due to a couple of factors. The report released this week from the CMS Office of the Actuary reports ending excessive payments to private insurers that offer Medicare Advantage plans will save about $60 billion. Anti-fraud efforts should save another $8 billion. And changing provider payments to include productivity is expected to save another $85 billion. According to CMS Acting Administrator Marilyn Tavener, the Affordable Care Act is the key to curtailing medical costs in America in a way that improves access to care while not cutting services. While there have been numerous attacks recently on access to contraception and abortion rights services across the country, some political pollsters see this as a trend that doesn't reflect the typical woman voter out there. A recent Gallup poll showed the top 5 issues women are voting on in this coming election: health care, gas prices, unemployment, and the deficit, in that order. Only about 1% of the women polled in a recent Gallup poll mentioned women's reproductive health or birth control as a top election year issue. And the former director of the American Public Health Association has died. Dr. Lester Breslow was the first clinician to offer mathematical proof that changing certain behaviors would lengthen lives, like quitting smoking and exercising regularly. Colleagues say he revolutionized how we approach public health in this country. He was 97. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news.
We're speaking today with Daniel Wolfson, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the American Board of Internal Medicine. That's the ABIM Foundation. The foundation, in conjunction with Consumer Reports, recently announced the launch of the Choosing Wisely campaign to reduce the overuse of unnecessary medical tests, which waste limited healthcare resources and drive up healthcare costs in this country. Mr. Wilson, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Daniel, your organization has long been committed to catalyzing improvements in healthcare by advancing medical professionalism, and you recently announced Choosing Wisely campaign, which has enlisted 9 leading medical societies to identify 5 tests each that are commonly used but often don't yield any benefits that justify the cost or the risk to the patients. We have the good fortune of working alongside Dr. Stephen Smith. He also serves on the ABIM Foundation board, and he spearheaded an initiative called the National Physicians Alliance Good Stewardship Project, which asked its members to identify 5 medical tests that could be greatly reduced. Tell us more about the partners in the Choosing Wisely campaign and your hopes and expectations for this initiative.
I work for the ABIM Foundation, which is different than the ABIM. American Board of Internal Medicine certifies physicians, and the ABIM Foundation, in coordination with ABIM, advances professionalism, does things like this campaign, all in the notion of how intrinsic motivation has an important role in improving quality. The physician charter spells out 3 principles and 10 commitments. One of them is social justice. One of our commitments was for physicians to be good stewards of limited resources. And that's been a real challenge for physicians to think about putting their patients first and then thinking about resources. And that was one of the reasons we were so interested in addressing the stewardship of limited resources. We also think that it's an important issue given healthcare reform and given the unsustainable economic trends in medicine, healthcare costs.
Daniel, your consortium of 9 medical societies, which represent, I understand, about 375,000 member physicians, so a very significant group, identified 45 commonly ordered tests that were deemed overused. And now I understand you've listed them all on your website, choosewisely.org, but talk to us about some of the most prevalent examples of these overused tests.
The list that came out was not a never-to-do list. We want to have informed conversations with patients and physicians. And so that's why we partnered with Consumer Reports to provide easy-to-use information for patients to have these conversations. So these 9 have come up with such things as a CT or an MRI after fainting, EKG or stress test at an annual checkup, antibiotics for acute sinusitis. These are some of the examples. I also wanted to talk about Steve Smith, if I could.
Oh, we'd love to hear about Steve.
Well, Steve is a real hero in my book because he was the one that applied for a grant from us suggesting that the National Physician Alliance should do this in internal medicine, family medicine, and in pediatric. And a small group representing about 36,000 physicians, but very forward-thinking, came up with this list, and it was called the Good Stewardship Project. They put that into the Journal of Archives of Internal Medicine, written by Steve Smith. In fact, Steve Smith has gotten another grant from us, and he's going to do tapes on how to talk to patients, how physicians should talk about patients about these kinds of things. Because oftentimes, you know, sometimes it's the physician recommending it, and sometimes the patient has heard about it on TV or radio, and the physician's in an awkward spot to say, listen, you really don't need that. I'm a father, and when I took my son with his cold, I was thinking, okay, antibiotics. Now I think that we're a little bit smarter, but we also need physicians to have the skill to provide the security, to provide alternative courses of treatment if that doesn't work. And Steve is working on that as well. So Steve gets a lot of credit for what we've done. We spread it to 9 major specialty societies who have 374,000 physicians, and we're also adding on 8 other more and even more to come.
Well, that's a great shout out for him. I want to pull the thread a little on that, Daniel, because patients come into their provider offices with, as you were saying, pre-established ideas about what tests they should receive. And now, your partnership with Consumer Reports may address some of these. And providers need to focus in on patient-centered care, which may address a little more of these. And you have your website, choosingwisely.org, where patients and providers can both go to and get information. Will Consumer Reports or any of the medical journals be coming out with additional reports or information about these recommendations? And what's the overall plan on patient education? I think that's at the heart of what you were talking about. And how do you see these resources working together?
So let me go on the physician side for a moment. All the specialty societies are having communications with their members about this. On the patient side, what we're hoping for is this translation of the recommendations into consumer-friendly language, and practicing physicians hopefully will have these in their offices to give to patients when such a conversation comes up. Mm-hmm. But Consumer Reports also has, within its arsenal, Consumer Reports, and we've also linked with AARP and eight other consumer organizations, and we want the message, the conversation, and that information to go through those channels. And I'm a person of great hope that the conversation has changed about talking about resource use. We don't want to blame the physicians. We don't want to blame the patients. Let's just have a rational conversation about use.
Well, Daniel, I think you you hit the nail on the head with that, and it seems to me that your campaign, Choose Wisely, is a wonderful phrase that certainly gets at the heart of respecting the professional decision-making. And really, I think your emphasis on social justice is one of the fundamentals of the foundation, and we haven't used the word rationing, but that certainly is something we learned a big lesson on during the health reform debates when we spoke about end-of-life care and how quickly well-intended measures could be taken out of context. Tell me a little more about this campaign for consumers. You mentioned perhaps Dr. Smith and others making tapes and really blocking at the outset, I think, the conversation turning to rationing and instead making it about quality and about informed decision making. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think you're right on. You're right on target. You know, rationing is when you're not given something that's beneficial, and this campaign is about giving you things that are not necessary and potentially harmful. The consumers, I believe, will be better informed, and there'll be better skills by the physicians about how to have this conversation, how to provide security to the patient. So I think both are going to be armed appropriately. Both are going to be involved in an informed decision, and both empowered. This campaign is not about the payers, the insurers, or the government, for that matter. This is about patients and consumers getting together to talk about what kind of healthcare system they would want, and to get rid of the hysteria about death panels. Those are more difficult conversations, but right now we're just talking about waste. And I heard a physician, Patty Gabo, she's a physician in charge of Denver Health.
Oh, yeah, we know her well.
And she said at a recent presentation, she was given an award by NCQA, waste is disrespectful to my employees and my patients. Why would anybody want to produce something that had no value to a patient? And how do they feel when they're giving something that is wasteful? And I think as we improve care, care will be better for patients, and care will be better for physicians to work in those environments. I think that there's three things that made the campaign take off like it has. One was the right messenger. Physicians, leaders, talking about the best care, the message being about quality and safety and doing no harm and optimum appropriate care and not wasteful. And three, the actions are relatively straightforward. There are certain things. We didn't name 300. We named five for each specialty, so the action is good. And the fourth thing, I think, is that we've been respectful of both physicians and patients in this. And we want to welcome people into this campaign. People can begin to ask the questions they need to ask. And we would love to hear their stories, of course, because we want to spread the word about those successful conversations or how somebody diverted a bad test. But again, there are exceptions. We had a wonderful New York Times editorial, which I think put us even more on the map.
We're speaking today with Daniel Wolfson, Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation, whose mission is to increase medical professionalism, reduce the waste of limited health resources, and promote the advancement of team-based care in the 21st century. Daniel, for years, various groups have sought ways to reduce expenses and improve health outcomes through recommending changes to care being provided. Talk to us a little bit about the evidence-based research that's going on, or you hope that will go on, around the recommendations, these clinical decision recommendations to reduce unnecessary testing and the effect they're having on expenses and outcomes.
Well, you know, I think clinical guidelines have been the hallmark of specialty societies for some time now, and they really advance the quality of care. And I think what we're trying to do is a kind of a different translation from, you know, the science to the practice. So a clinical guideline is put out, it's put in a clinical journal, and it's a hope that people will take that those guidelines up and practice those. So I think what we're trying to think about are what are some creative ways of taking all that knowledge, and there is much, much more clinical information that's just so hard to keep up. And there's a whole set of habits and trainings that go on involving physicians and patterns of practice. So is this campaign maybe a different way of thinking about that translation of knowledge into practice? And that's what we're going to explore over the years to come, this notion of that it takes 17 years for new knowledge to be converted into practice. Have you ever heard that before?
Yes, and I'm hoping that soon we're no longer going to have to say that. There's just no excuse for it anymore.
From bench to bedside.
But it has a tremendous complex nature about it. And so I'm hoping in the future we're going to test this translation, new ways of thinking about translation. And this campaign maybe is the tip of the iceberg. But I'm hoping that there's a better conversation. It's a prestigious academic medical center, and the person that is the associate dean said that on any grand rounds, we're going to ask them not to leave the building without telling us what a choosing wisely item is. So already these kind of conversations are permeating, but I think this is way beyond just this foundation. I think this has hit a positive chord, and, you know, no politics as usual.
And Daniel, I can tell you here in Connecticut, around tables of primary care coalitions that I sit at, it is already being discussed, and I think that would be true even if Dr. Smith wasn't one of the people often at those tables. But let me ask you this. Certainly we all recognize we're living in a great and exciting time of transformation in healthcare, and Choosing Wisely is one of many initiatives of the foundation, and others have focused on certainly the very important area of medical education and training reform, on payment reform, team-based care, patient-centered care, care coordination. Tell us how these initiatives relate to one another, and particularly how do they relate to choosing the Choose Wisely initiative?
That's a good question. The issue that we've been that runs throughout our organization has been about relationships amongst physicians. We've also focused very much recently on primary care, and that when we talk about teamwork, that was around primary care. Two things I think have to happen to really get a handle around cost. One is the reimbursement system has to be addressed. That is not a part of this campaign, but it certainly has to be addressed, and payment is so crucial. But primary care, having a vitality within primary care, having the best medical students and residents be attracted to primary care, is essential to excellent care and sustainable economically. Other countries have higher percentages of primary care physicians than we do, and their costs are lower, and their outcomes are better, and their satisfaction of patients and physicians are better.
I want to ask you a follow-up on that, though. How do you see your recommendations being received internationally, and are there ideas from other countries that you're looking to incorporate into your recommendations, or international organizations you're considering partnering with?
You know, we're a fairly, you know, small organization, and we try to be a catalyst. If somebody would have come across the pond and ask us what we did, we would certainly try to help them start their own kind of initiative around this.
Well, in the spirit of innovation, Daniel, we like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation that our listeners at Conversation should be keeping an eye on?
I see a lot of innovative practices that are looking at the patient well-being and the physician well-being and that it's a joy for patients to enter and physicians to enter. And there's pockets of these innovations. And I think the government, under the Affordable Care Act, is setting up some excellent demonstrations that could become reality around accountable care organizations, patient-centered medical homes, bundling. And I think all those new models, particularly bundling of services, are going to require new kind of conversations, new trusting relationships. And I think that's the core of professionalism, in my estimation, those trusting relationships between patients and physicians, between physicians and nurses. And that's what's going to be needed. And I think that that will be the biggest innovation that we see going forward and the most needed. But if we have an overcrowded system, and I mean an over, you know, where there's high volume, the outcomes are worse, satisfaction is worse, the access is worse, and the outcomes, the health of the people are worse. So we've just got to get a handle on this, and I think that our part of our campaign is about this. If we reduce unnecessary care, we'll have the capacity to deliver what is needed in a timely way and in a quality way.
We've been speaking today with Daniel Wolfson, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the ABIM Foundation. The foundation, in conjunction with Consumer Reports, recently announced the launch of their Choosing Wisely campaign to reduce the overuse of unnecessary medical tests, which waste limited healthcare resources and drive up healthcare costs in this country. You can find a link to their recommendations at their website, choosingwisely.org. Mr. Wolfson, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much. It was a real honor and privilege to be with you today.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, we've seen many claims about small businesses being hurt by the federal healthcare law. One example of that, there was an ad from an independent group that said the law was, quote, devastating to small businesses. But that runs counter to the facts. Businesses with 50 or fewer full-time employees are actually exempt from paying any penalties under the law. They don't have to provide health insurance for their employees. And even smaller businesses, those with fewer than 25 full-time workers, are eligible for tax credits to help them buy coverage if they choose to do so. Businesses would have to have average wages under $50,000 and pay half of the cost of an employee health plan. One expert told us that truly small businesses would likely come out as winners under the law. John Shields, he's the senior vice president of the Lewin Group, an independent subsidiary of United Health Group, told us that small businesses have an advantage in the marketplace since they aren't subject to the mandate and could get that tax credit. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Prosthetics have achieved something of a high art form in this country, with technologic advances that make them more lifelike than ever. But the typical prosthetic device in America costs about $10,000. In countries like Thailand, where the average salary is about $2 a day, that cost is simply prohibitive for the thousands of amputees there. Dr. Turchai Jivakate, who did his residency at Northwestern University, knew that he had to tackle three problems to make limbs available to those in poor and remote areas. He needed low-cost materials, he needed trained technicians to make and fit the devices, and he had to get the prosthetics to the amputees. His solutions? First, he devised a method to use recycled plastic from items as simple as used yogurt containers in place of the expensive titanium and created a lightweight, highly efficient limb adaptable to the physical rural Thai lifestyle. He managed to design high-quality prosthetics for about $100 apiece, and he launched the Prosthesis Foundation of Thailand. Dr. Jivakate trained amputees who were already using the comfortable, lightweight artificial limbs to become the next generation of fitting technicians for new patients, thus giving the new amputees the support of people who've been there, and at the same time creating jobs for these technicians. He also realized that he had to bring the clinic to the patients, and he launched a fleet of mobile units that go out into the remote countryside to find those in need. Since the foundation began, 25,000 amputees have received affordable, comfortable, working prosthetics. The Prosthesis Foundation of Thailand has turned discarded waste into wealth at a tiny fraction of the typical cost. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.